Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
Sorry about your luck.
But yeah, well, you know, someday I'll get this MRI. Someday I'll find out if there's a tumor in my ear.
That's fun stuff, seeing your brain. I've seen the folds of it.
I hope I can see the part where creativity is.
Mm-hmm. Do you know I can't have an MRI?
Why?
Because I had my jaw was broken, so they put like lots of metal in my face.
I hate when my jaw was break.
Yeah, they're right? Like, okay. So
I'm like, yeah, come on, guys.
I would look like together. They said I'd look like Wolverine. Like, okay. If they did an MRI, like, it would be like the adamantium being, like, pulled out of my face.
Yeah. Cool.
And, like, it would just, like, rip through my skin.
Cool.
I had an MRI once, and they looked at my optic nerve, and it looked like I had two eyeballs on it, one right behind the other one. I was like, hey, sup with that? And they're like, don't worry about it. It's cool.
Well,
doctors don't know what they're doing.
What if, like, that was the eye that, like, saw reality, and, like,
I think the eye in front of
it is, like, just the complacent eye and, like, a fictional reality?
I think I absorbed the twin. And on my eye stall.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I have scientific evidence that says that my game is in fact the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I brought an app.
Good. My name is Chris Grant, and I am gonna, I guess, judge which actual game is the best.
Yeah, that's the way it works here on the Besties, in which we pit the hottest, latest, newest titles of the week against each other. They battle in Mortal Kombat, one reigns supreme, and then we pit it against our reigning champion to see if it is our new game of the year. Chris Plant, what is our current reigning champion?
Oh gosh.
Yowzers. I remember. Is it still Mark of the Ninja?
Is it still Mark of the Ninja? Has it only been 1 week?
Well, last week we talked about the Wii U, so. So we didn't have games last week. Is everybody okay? Quick sidebar about the Wii U. I got an email from Chris Plant on Saturday after we recorded the Besties, and he said the subject is I had a dream, and he said I had a dream in which you told me I was obligated to give every last video game a fighting chance. I woke up and pre-ordered a deluxe Wii U from Toys R Us. Thanks for the most expensive dream ever. And then I read that email and I thought, oh man, I haven't pre-ordered one yet. I should probably pre-order one too if Chris is going to. So see, both Chris and I were, I don't know, spiritually guilted into pre-ordering Wii U's.
They fucking got you. They fucking got you somewhere. Reggie Fils-Aimé is lying back in a chair, pumped full of drugs, and he's jacked into some sort of internet. And he's Wi-Fi incepting every single game blogger in the universe. I'm telling you, between that and the limiting of stock, GameStop has already sold out of the deluxe Wii U. That's great. Because did they get 15 of them? Is that what happened? It's crazy town.
Justin, I actually wasn't. I wasn't totally honest with you.
Okay.
So the dream you were the end of a grander dream in which it was me and Reggie playing a pickup game of hoops, and he said, you know, we'll play, and if you win, I'll buy a new iPad, and if I win, you got to get that deluxe shiz, and then you got to get all your friends to get that shiz too. Mm. And it was a close game. It came down to a 3-point buzzer.
Was it a close game? Because Reggie Fils-Aimé probably has 16 feet on you.
Yeah, but no, in my dream, I'm 20 feet tall.
Did he try to make small talk like, hey, so Chris, did you happen to watch the latest episodic release of Breaking Bad this week. Chris, you're our commish. Maybe you should tell us who you want to pitch their game first. Oh, have you played anything this week?
I've been playing Mark of the Ninja, which you guys have already thoroughly vetted. I've also been playing a little game we call Borderlands 2.
Oh, don't talk about that one too much.
You'll be able to contribute.
Yeah, I can talk about it. How about this? Because I like to hear myself talk. Let's start with Griffin so we can get right into B2.
My game of the week is Borderlands 2. It is a shooter of the first person variety. Everybody, I feel like it's silly to describe what the game is. It's a first person shooter, class based, 4-player co-op, big old open world, quests, a bunch of loot, and it's real edgy. It's got a very edgy motif to it. It's the second one, so it's better than the first one. And it's got this robot in it, and the robot is a real cut up. It's very good. It has its fair share of flaws. Arthur addressed a lot of them in the review. I think its biggest issue, and I'll go ahead and do your guys' work for you. The quests are often not very good. The two problems are, almost all of them are sort of MMO-esque fetch and retrieval quests, which is rough because you'll get a quest in the main hub town and then travel to where the quest is, get the thing, and then have to travel all the way back to the main hub town. Of course, there's fast travel and stuff like that helps that process out a little bit, but it's still not very fluid. And what makes it worse is that you can track the quests and look at them on your map, but you can have a ton of quests in your queue, but you can only track one of them at a time, which means only one of them shows up on the map at a time, which is befuddling because you will run out and do a quest and return it and then realize that you just ran straight by four different quests that you could have been doing.
That's Dead Island problem.
It's not only an MMO problem, it's an antiquated MMO problem. Because even WoW, whenever you look at the map, it shows you where everything is, including all of your quest objectives. It's crazy to me that is not a thing that you can do. That aside, it is very, very good. It scratches the Diablo itch really well. It's got this enormous, enormous open world that will take months to catalog. I've been trying to stay away from Reddit because whenever I'm looking for news for the site,
that's every, the only place we find news.
Every single Reddit update has check out this crazy Easter egg that I found in this corner of the world that nobody's been to yet. You feel like that sense of exploration is very, very much alive, which is good because you're going to be going over that world a lot as you do these quests. The bad things about the quest almost actually lend themselves to the co-op because you can jump in and help somebody out with a quest that you've already done, or maybe you haven't already done, and you don't feel like, oh man, this is a quest that I should be doing for myself in my game. I feel like that's an issue that RPGs, multiplayer RPGs, have, is that if you hop in and help somebody out with a quest that you haven't done yet, the only thing you can think is, ah, crap, I got to do this one later too. I don't want to do it twice. I guess I'm saying some of the quests are so bad that you won't feel like doing them twice, and so you don't have to. But the customization is leaps and bounds above Borderlands. You can customize the look of your character. You can unlock these class mods that change the title of your character. There's the four basic classes that then branch out. My commando is now an engineer because I applied an engineer class mod that I think makes my turret stronger or something like that. There's it seems limited what you can do with the classes, but it really takes 2 hours to realize that it is actually very, very deep. I was in a group with another engineer or another commando, and our play styles were just completely different. It's neat. It's a really fun co-op experience. The quests are not great, but But they're all, I mean, they're almost all optional. The story quests are usually much more, there's a lot more variety in there.
So here's what I want to know, Griff.
Yo.
Do you LOL and or raffle at Claptrap's antics?
God, I don't know. Yeah, the writing in the game is, for the most part, good. I can't get down on comedy that is really self-aware. Like, I don't think memes are very funny on the internet anyway. And I feel like when you put that stuff in the game, it's like, yeah, we know about memes too. Can you believe it? And it's like, yeah, I wicked can.
I think that there's like some really fun writing in the game, and then there's some stuff that tries so hard.
That's
it comes
it.
Across
yeah.
as desperate. It comes across as like, please like me. And Claptrap, I have not even cracked a smile at him yet.
Yeah.
And he's like,
do you know who he is? Claptrap?
He's one of the devs, right?
Well, no. He's Red Leader in Star Wars.
Oh.
Remember that? Like, I can't shake him. I can't shake him. It's like if you took that character and then just took that irritating voice and spread it for an entire game, you would have.
But it's
Claptrap.
Not even that. It's like he comes. I mean, it's so. I feel like it's kind of poking fun at the bro-y, fratty mentality, but by doing it, it really is, in fact,
it's
itself
it.
Becoming bro-y and fratty.
Right.
And Claptrap is the most annoying character. It's
Matt,
like,
Hazard problem, right? Of that you can parody something, but you can't parody it by doing it. Also, and like that doesn't fix your problem.
It's like when a hipster shotguns a beer.
It's the Dawson's Creek dilemma, really.
Oh, I'm way into this. Hit me.
I'm just, you know, we're teens. We're making a movie about teens. It's so terrible. Can you believe all these tropes are using in the movie? What can you imagine if real life was like that? What if our lives were like that? It is like that. Watch the show. Anyway, but every other character I feel like is entertaining. I like Dr. Zed. I like the mechanic guy. For me, that's not the appeal. The appeal to me, I love a game with a good progression system, and this one has it in spades. I like getting new guns, and it's not just that the guns are more powerful. They do like crazy stuff. Like, I will use a gun that is weaker than that new hot gun I just found. If my old gun, when I reload it, I throw it like a grenade. Like that's fantastic. I'm a big fan of that. So I still get excited about that part of the game. And if you like that stuff, then you're gonna like this too. I feel like I have a good defense, like not defense, but I have been acclimated to this because I have played a lot of MMOs, and it really does seem like an MMO quest structure. But it's much more fast paced and fun, especially when you get four players in there, like all shooting at a boss. It's complete mayhem.
Can you tell me if this is the right reading of Borderlands 2? Because this feels like a game that was really hyped, because Borderlands 1 was like kind of neat ideas in a really rough package. And Borderlands 2 is going to come out, and I was like, my perception was, okay, they're going to fix all those things, and then it's going to be a sequel. Like, we're going to get lots of crazy new stuff too. And really what they did was they just fixed Borderlands 1.
I think that the different progression mechanics, I really do think it adds much more to the game. I couldn't get into Borderlands because I never felt like my character in Borderlands was my character. I felt like I was just progressing the same way that everybody else was progressing with this character. And I can't, that's a dead stop for me. I feel like the way that they've changed that is really huge. I don't know about newer, I just think it's bigger. And I think that's how they've marketed the game, and it's not wrong. It is absolutely enormous. But yeah, I don't know. I still think there's room for improvement. I think that I don't know. I think the quest thing could be patched. Like, just let me see where everything is on the map. That is so unintuitive and awful. Like, I do not know how they didn't catch that and play like, oh man, this is really, the only thing I can think is it makes the game artificially longer because you're, you know what I mean? Like, you have to go
and
switch.
Yeah, and it didn't need that, right?
No, it didn't, because it's already super long. I don't know.
He said in his review, and this is kind of impossible to understand, he said in his review that he played something like 40 to 50 hours of it. By the end of it, he didn't do most of the side quests, and he still hadn't seen the entire map, but he had retread and backtracked over a ton of the map he did see. So, right. Like, on the main story quest, they're having you backtrack while leaving whole chunks of the map, you know, closed off, and I guess accessible through side quests. It just seems weird that they would, like, you know, like, why would you maybe make the side quests have the backtracking? And
there's a few problems, and the first and biggest is the fact that you can't see everything in the map. I think the town hub idea is just awful, because that if you're doing fetch quests, by the very definition of them, if you have to fetch like 100 miles away, that is the opposite of fun. Like, if you want to follow that MMO structure, I think there's a way you can do it in an offline game. You just have to do it well. Like in World of Warcraft, if you go to a new area, you will find clusters of quests that have you go to an area nearby, and then when you finish that cluster, you go to another cluster that's also nearby, and by the end, you have finished exploring an entire area and done all of the quests in that area without running all around the goddamn world. Borderlands is like, come back to this one hub, go out into the world somewhere, do it, and then come back. Like, there's quests out in the world too, but I feel like most of the things I do are for the Sanctuary hub. Anyway, do better. Still a good game though.
Alright. What are you talking about, Justin? What's your game?
I could talk about FTL, but unless we want the show to come to like a devastating decrescendo, we should probably just start with do plants next.
Okay. Plant, tell us about the exciting, action-packed, totally unique game that you're bringing to today's The Besties.
Making it sound like you don't like it already.
No, I don't even know what it is. I'm sure that it is very unique and that the gameplay mechanic in it is new and that we're going to be excited to hear about it.
Okay, I'm going to give you the title and you tell me what you think this game is, okay? The game is called Rayman Jungle Run.
Huh.
Okay.
What type of game do you think that is when you hear that?
It's probably going to be a platformer, I bet.
I'm going to say a life sim based on Everybody Loves Raymond.
No, that sounds much... I don't want to say better, but better. That sounds good. He's on Parenthood now, guys. I don't know if you're watching that stuff, but... Oh, man.
Listen.
He's
great.
Week in, week out.
Okay, so this game. I'm surprised you said platformer, because it is a platformer, but when I hear Run in an iOS title, I think a really bad Cannonball ripoff, especially if it has an established IP already on top of it. It's like Burger King Run. The King's going to... He's going to run.
Wait, hold on a second. Is that real?
Grab all the patties.
Is Burger King Run real? How does Kid Vid do it? He's in a wheelchair.
He just wheels. Kid Vid wheel.
Isn't Kid Vid... you know what? I think Temple Run. I think the behind the player, you know, sort of thing. That's my...
Yeah. You mean Pitfall?
Yeah.
Pitfall Run, yeah. just like Pitfall. But yeah, so this game, it should just be called Rayman Origins iOS or something. Because it's really a smart design in which they took the controls of an endless runner, but they put it in a like traditional platformer format. So you have 40-some stages, each of which have a beginning and an end, and you have collectible items. The difference being the computer does have you running constantly. You're always moving from left to right. But you can actually subvert it by using walls and wall jumps and enemies even to kind of propel yourself against the current to find hidden areas. So you're not... just, you know, moving on a flat surface from left to right, you can actually kind of reverse the flow of the game by using bounce pads and everything to find secrets. So it still feels like a platformer in the sense that this world is explorable, but you don't have to worry about all the pains that would come with trying to play a platformer on a touchscreen system. And it looks exactly like the game on Xbox 360, which... I guess that means it doesn't take much to power it on a console, but it looks stupid good on an iPhone Retina display.
So it's basically like the treasure, tricky treasure levels. Is what it sounds like.
Kind of.
That, just that sense of momentum. Like
yeah,
having,
yeah, it is kind of like that. It's somewhere between the normal levels and the tricky treasure levels. And there are ones that are more like those things where you really are just speeding through it, collecting things at, you know, a breakneck pace. But there are some where you kind of do stop just by, you know, running into things and kind of map out which direction you want to go. I mean, ultimately, if you want to beat the game, if you want to get, you know, every collectible and unlock all the bonus stages, you have to play it like that, where you're moving constantly and you're kind of subverting what the game wants to pull you to do. But the first go-through, it is somewhere in between.
Oh,
I don't know.
How many bucks is it?
It's $2.99. You guys sound really down on this.
Oh my god! It just I don't. Can I be honest? I've tried to do the Rayman thing.
Are you kidding? You're gonna trash Rayman?
I'm not gonna trash Rayman. I'm sure he's great.
Did you really not like Rayman Origins?
Are you serious?
Just nothing about it clicked with me. I just didn't.
No
get
way.
It.
You're kidding me.
I really don't like platformers. Like, as a rule, I don't dislike platformers. I think I like them more than I do. I can't remember the last platformer I got into. Like, really got into.
Was it Boogerman?
Charm?
What? It's not that. It's just like the mechanics don't appeal to me. They're not the kind of mechanics I just don't think it's fun to jump around on things and, like, explore and look for hidden tracks. It just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't click with me.
One of these games where you get to shoot people that are a different ethnicity than you are.
No, that's fundamentally untrue. I just don't think platformers are very fun. I don't like to.
Yeah, no, they were just a little more xenophobic. It would be totally cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. I want Rayman to have a turban on his head, basically.
If it was
stomping Irish people.
Yeah, right.
If it's not a real dirty Japanese dating sim, then yeah. Justin, just no interessante.
Yeah. If it doesn't have tentacle intrigue, I'm not.
Tentacle intrigue? Is that what you said?
A tentacle intrigue. Onomimoshi Tentacle Intrigue 4 is actually the pinnacle of the series. That's where they... it's all rotoscoped using puppetry.
Yeah, Studio Ghibli, I think, helped out on that one, right?
Yeah, Studio Ghibli did.
I want to.
He was like, "You've got my axe. Let's make a tentacle porn game." So Studio Ghibli really—they were very helpful.
I thought for a brief second it would be great if you know somebody did some fan art of that. But now I thought about it for 1 second, and please do not.
Please don't. Please don't.
do not. Whatever happens, do not do fan art of that.
What about Gimli? But his beard is coming down. But his beard turns into tentacles.
Nope. Let's stop talking about it. Let's just forget about it and move on. It's probably best if we just forget about it.
Here's what I'm gonna say, you guys. Probably a lot of people who listened to this didn't play Rayman Origins last year, even though it was one of the best.
Yeah.
If
you missed on that, you're a dunce.
Yeah. And right. So here, $2.99, you can get a pretty good idea of what that game feels like. Play it on the App Store, and then if you like it, be like, "Oh, I wonder what this would feel like if it was bigger and better and had 4-player co-op on the same screen," and then go and get Rayman Origins, because it's good. Or if like me, you are one of the goobers buying a Wii U, get that other new Rayman sweet stuff, Rayman Legends.
It's one of the best games on the Vita right now too. It's a lot of fun to take on the road,
guys. Is the best platformer I think that's going to be available on Wii U. We'll see, but I would be shocked if New Super Mario Brothers had any more creative juice in it than the new Rayman.
You keep saying Raymond. It's weirding me out.
Rayman.
I have a confession. While you guys were talking, I was checking GameStop because I have not pre-ordered it yet. I just figured I wasn't in a rush, you know.
Oh, it's gone.
It's gone. Yeah, but how?
They had like 8.
Because they had like 14 of them.
Yeah, and they always get in trouble. They don't want to do that again.
Do you remember how the 3DS they had, they shipped out roughly, hold on, let me punch out the numbers here, 16 trillion of those they sent them out, and then people were like, "Oh, well we're going to discount these by about $200. and then they sold them for about $25 each, and then Nintendo lost all the money, and now they all live on the street. Do you remember how Satoru Iwata now lives on the street? he lives in a boxcar, and he travels from country to country, and just throwing Nintendo 3DSs at children.
Do you remember how it used to be that now Satoru Iwata lives on the street?
You know, do you remember how that is right now? Do you remember how Satoru Iwata has to sleep in just a big pile of wild dogs on the street to stay warm on those cold, cold Japanese streets? Just sleeps in a big wild dog pile.
Do you remember, if you think back, that one time that is happening right now where they had to eat Nestor to stay alive?
Yeah,
I hope Powerlinger doesn't catch wind of that, because he's going to regulate.
They don't want that to happen again. So instead, they cut it down from 200 trillion to 14. And now there's 14 Here's the lucky thing. Kids.
As far as I can tell, there's still 200 trillion of the $300 crap version that doesn't come with any of the stuff.
Those, like, crazy.
They're like,
nobody wants that.
So it doesn't come with a $60 game. It doesn't. It has one quarter the built-in memory. Doesn't have a charging stand. Save $50. Like, I wouldn't.
How many parents are gonna buy that shiz on Thanksgiving Day, thinking they did good?
I'd give
Christmas
them $100.
Christmas Day is gonna come, and baby Chris is gonna be like, take it back.
The kid unwraps it and just barfs right on it. Like, no!
It's Nintendo 64, kid. He's older now. He's in college.
But it's a... Oh, fucking great. Thanks, Dad, I guess.
Barf.
I have an announcement for everyone. This Rayman game looks beautiful and is fun.
Thank you.
So I take it all back, Chris.
You bought it? That's too bad, because I'm going to end up pushing for your game,
so it's not going to win anyway.
It's gorgeous. I'm looking at it right now. It's gorgeous. Yeah.
$3.
It's genuinely lovely to look at.
And if you act like $3 is a lot of money, I'm going to come over there and punch you in the nut.
It's big, big money, Chris.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, mister. Oh, I've got my mansions in Philadelphia. Old Fishtown. Big guy.
Hey, my house costs less than $3. So
hey,
think about it.
Real quick, for halftime here, I wanted to see if you guys had gotten iOS 6 yet. And see if you think it is, like, the snooze of the century. Because I got it, and I was, I don't know, usually an iOS release is met with some anticipation, but, man, I don't give a crap. I have an iPhone 4, if that colors it any.
I've got an iPhone 5 in front of me right now, and I have iOS 6 on it, and I'm not sure what's new. It's got new maps. That's it.
Yeah, which apparently aren't very good.
Yeah.
So, great gerb.
Yeah, I'm honestly hard pressed to tell you about the new features in iOS 6.
The App Store looks a lot better.
Yeah, but that's like, they could do an update on that any day of the week. I don't need a new operating system. That's like saying, hey, Steam has a client update. You need the new version of macOS. Like,
yeah.
What?
Not exactly, but the maps, I guess, and I guess Siri does some stuff, but my phone doesn't do Siri.
But
yeah.
Siri's new things are like, she can do movie times now, and it's like, hey, how about an API so that she can do like a million things? Like, I don't know.
Is that stuff different on my iPad too?
Yes.
Yeah, on your new iPad.
My iPad 3.
Your iPad 3 has Siri.
Yeah.
My iPad next doesn't have Siri.
It has Siri on iOS 6.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye, suckers. Hold on. I'm going to go talk to a robot.
iPad 2 doesn't because of something about microphones. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, it doesn't have enough microphones. It's got a microphone. It doesn't have the right...
It doesn't have enough microphones.
So, I've been thinking about getting into that Lumia because I've been looking. I love the Android App Store. It's got such a renegade spirit to it. Like, nothing on it is very good, and most of it is illegal, pirated, stolen copies. And, like, I like that. It's got, like, a whole
gray
market.
Yeah, you realize
appeal.
It's Windows 8, right?
It's Windows Phone 8, which is even... So that's similar to the Android App Store, being kind of a renegade, except it doesn't even have the pirated stuff in it. It's just empty.
Yeah. Well, I don't want that. What's a good Android?
The Galaxy S.
RoboCop. Is that an Android, or he's an Android, right?
I don't need no RoboCop.
iOS 6, I think, is kind of a snore. I had a fun encounter this week. I was noticing how my area does not have LTE, and it is also not on the list of coming soon properties. like, not on the list of places coming soon to have LTE, but Verizon had LTE in my area. And so I said on Twitter, like, yo, I'm out.
Well, I'm switching. You're on AT&T, right?
Yes, I'm on
AT&T,
right.
They own your ass.
Right. But I was an empty threat because, like, I'm on a shared plan with my wife. I'm not going to go through the hassle of switching providers for LTE.
Or switching assholes because AT&T owns it. That's in the EULA of AT&T. They own your a-hole.
So I complain on Twitter, and they say, well, okay, just relax. We're going to DM you. Don't do this. Like, okay.
They DM'd you and said, who ass is this? Who ass is this?
Is this our ass? I think this is our ass. But
why
they
does
said,
it sound like you're in prison? Like,
because my ass is theirs.
Two cellmates are fighting over whose wife they're gonna have.
They said, listen, there's good news. We got LTE in Huntington right now. I'm like, oh man, are you serious? They're like, yes. Look at this coverage map. I'm like, okay, I'm looking at it. The coverage map on AT&T is crazy. If you haven't seen it, it is all in shades of blue. So, like, if you have cell phone service, it's light blue. If you can get 3G, it's, like, a slightly darker blue. If you got 4G, it's a darker blue than that. And if you have LTE, it's the darkest of blues. So this guy didn't know the difference between the different shades of blue. I don't know if this fool was colorblind or what. But he tried to convince me that, no, definitely, definitely do have LTE in the area. And then I later get a call that, sorry about that, Pedro was mistaken. We don't have LTE in the area, but...
Was that his real name, or are you being racist?
No, it's Pedro. Pedro was mistaken. We don't have LTE in the area, but look for it by the end of the year.
Whoa.
And they're like, don't hold me to that, but... And I'm like, okay, well, don't worry, you're AT&T. Like, I literally... I couldn't if I wanted to, because my ass is yours.
Mm-hmm. Your whole ass. Your asshole, too.
The whole thing. All right, I'm going to talk about... Speaking of LTE... Can I talk about FTL?
Oh, God, this game.
Let's do it.
So good.
Turn it on.
Okay, so, FTL.
Good luck describing it.
I say this in my review, and it is very true. The hardest thing about FTL is convincing people that it is as much fun as it is. Because if you had described it to me before I played it, I would have... I'm not sure I would have made it through the entire description. But it is a... And bear with me here. It is a top-down space combat / exploration sim with roguelike elements and strategy elements. No, okay.
And that's system maintenance and ship building.
So that's a lot of that's a lot of subgenres there. Let me just tell you what it is like. You captain a spaceship. You name it whatever you want. You have a crew, and you can name them whatever you want. It's all very basic, both graphically and just sort of in the UI. I mean, you have the fundamentals there. So you can rename your crew, you rename your ship, you set out into space. You're on the run from this huge fleet of rebels, and you're trying to get some vital information back to the Federation that you belong to. So the flow of the game is you planet hopping, flying from planet to planet, sector to sector, trying to escape the rebels and get back to the Federation with this information. On some of the planets, you'll find hostile rebels or pirates that want to take your ship and you have to destroy them. Sometimes it's a store where you can buy upgrades for your ship. Sometimes it's a random story event, like we want to do research on your crew and we'll pay you in credits. Or sometimes it's a distress call where you can go and rescue somebody for a reward, or maybe it's a trap or whatever. The really coolest thing about the game, and the what really I think is the best hook, is the combat. So your main view when you're in a fight, you don't control the movement of your ship. What you control is targeting. Every room in your ship is tied to a system. So you have a shields room and a... life support room and a
weapons
room, right? An oxygen room, and when enemies can target specific rooms and shut those systems down, and you have to send crew members from your ship to repair those systems. If they're in an undamaged room, then they're providing a boost to it. You have to decide to pull them off of the system that they're supplying the boost to and go set them to repair the room, which they'll automatically do if you enter them into it. It's all very simple from a control perspective. You also have a limited pool of energy that you can shift between your different systems. So if you are hurting and limping back to a repair station, maybe you want to put more energy into your shields. Or if you're up against an enemy with strong defenses, maybe you want to push all your energy into your weaponry. When you are under attack, the rooms can get damaged. That sucks. But sometimes they can also be set on fire, which makes it dangerous to send your crew members into. And you can do stuff like open the blast doors on your ship to let the vacuum of space in and suck all the oxygen in the room out, and put the fire out. That's more moving on to more advanced stuff. There's like there's cloaking systems you can buy for your ship. There's you can teleport your crew members onto the enemy ship to try to take it apart that way. And there are so many different. The reason it shares with like the roguelike genre is you are almost always going to die. It's usually a question of how far can you make it, because it is pretty darn difficult. But the amount of different encounters you can have is really staggering, and it makes every playthrough feel like a new adventure. I never got frustrated when I got killed. I was ready to just get started and go again, because I wanted to see what I was going to run into this time and readjust my strategy, because it's so deep while being very easy to understand, because it's all visually laid out for you on one screen. You know everything that's going on. It's just maybe you over-invest in shields, and then the enemy's able to send one Mantis Man over to your ship and eat everybody. And it's like, well, you don't have a crew now. Perhaps you should have thought of this before. It's like, ah, damn it. Next time, I'm going to have a droid on board that I can activate that'll fight people that try to board my ship. And then, you know, the next time, who knows what you'll run into. But it's like $9 right now on Steam. And I've probably spent 15 hours playing it over the last week. I'm hopelessly hooked on it. A typical playthrough lasts about, anywhere from a half hour to an hour, typically. And it's like the most. It's a ton of fun. Plant, you've been playing it. What am I missing?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about roguelikes in general, because I love Spelunky earlier this year. In a weird way, I feel like they have a lot in common. In the sense, one, that they're roguelikes, but two, there's something about these games that I'm starting to realize I love about video games in general that most games don't do right. That cost a lot more to make, and that's. The best video games, for me, tend to be cause and effect simulations, like big machines of just vast, like, cause and effect systems. So when I say that, I mean, in this game, somebody targets your oxygen, and they knock that out. So suddenly you don't have oxygen, and you have to run and refill the oxygen or everyone dies. That was like, that's a really simple cause and effect. You know, you can't worry about shooting them anymore, because if you can't breathe, you can't fight. But then you see, like, more complex versions of that, where a fire started in my ship and it filled five rooms right away. They like three missiles just basically destroyed the ship. And what I had to do was empty all the doors on my entire ship at once. I opened all of them and it flooded the vacuum of space in, which sucked all the air out, which killed the fires, but it knocked everyone's health down to two. But it allowed them to continue operating the systems. And not when I say two, it lowered their health very low. But it allowed them to keep operating the system. So it was a quick choice that hurt everyone, but then it allowed me to take out this ship at the last second. So I got rid of all this fire without taking anyone off of their duty. I defeated this ship that was like way above my rank, all because I knew kind of how to play that cause and effect.
And sometimes it works against you in really fun ways. Like, for example, there will be a fire in a big section of your ship. You'll open the doors, suck out all the fire, and then an enemy missile will take out your doors.
Yeah.
We'll take out your door system. So you can't reshut it. So it's about like, oh God, now I got to send a guy into a room that doesn't have oxygen and he's going to die, but he has to fix the doors or else I can't fix the doors unless I can't, you know, and now something else just got shot while I was thinking about it.
And that's why I think, sorry, just to finish this really quick. I think that's why cause and effects make for good storytelling. Like when you talk about this game, like most games, they have like a simple cause and effect. It's you shoot him in the face and he dies, or you shoot him in the body and he dies a little slower. And that's a first person shooter. There's not a whole lot of different things you can do. Well, here there's so many things are tied to each other. You know, one thing happening in one part of your ship will affect everything else that you do, that it creates these hills and valleys of a story where you'd be like, well, the oxygen went out, so I saved the oxygen, but by doing that, I left myself prone to my shield, so then they blasted a hole in the front of the ship. So then I opened all the doors, and with whatever oxygen I had left, I, you know, fired missiles, and I took them out, and then I leaped to a new planet just in time to survive. Like, you get all these things are causing new things to happen, and you're having to react one thing after another.
This sounds amazing, and I'm gonna buy it when we're done with the podcast. I'm gonna play it for the rest of the workday. Please don't tell Brian.
I will.
My problem is, and it's a problem that I've had with all roguelikes that I've only just recently discovered, is that I understand that the mechanics of a roguelike, of a good roguelike, are built around the impermanence of it, of when you die, you're done. But it's hard for me to really fall in love with that model when it has these like great progression systems and you're getting stronger and you're learning, and then it's over, and then you have to start over. Like,
there is a mode for you. Well, it is called easy. Justin and I had talked about this. I don't like that. I like where you lose everything. Like, I like a really hard roguelike that it's chaos and you can just lose for no reason other than trusting someone that they are a good guy, and then getting on board their ship and finding out that they are actually sick with a flu that kills your entire team. Like, that is,
I'm saying though that there is a way to work that kind of stuff into the game without the penalty, which is the ultimate penalty next to like deleting itself off of your computer or console if you die. The ultimate penalty that a game can do to you is start you over. There is a way to give you that experience. Like, take Dark Souls. Like, Dark Souls has that same thing about learning, and it has punishment. But at the same time, if you die, like, not all hope is lost. Well, that, like, I don't like starting over in a game. It seems counterintuitive to me. And I understand that makes me sound like a huge... But
no, I completely, Griffin, I agree with you. I do think I'm a big proponent of I'm a big proponent of ethical design that doesn't waste your time, it doesn't take your time for granted. Here's what I would say in terms of FTL in a few instances. One, there is an easy mode where it's not super easy. It's a lot easier, and you are frequently, I mean, you will frequently still die. So that can help with the experience.
But
the
if you die thing, in easy mode, you still start over.
You still start over. But wait, there's two other things. One is there are achievements in the game that you can use to unlock better ships. So if you get if you get to the fifth sector, for example, then you unlock another ship.
The Borg and that cube.
Like a Borg cube, and that is permanent. That does not go away with time. So that is one thing. The other thing I would say is that the game is laid out in such a way that it is designed to. I don't know why this is. I could probably figure it out if I thought about it enough. But it is emotionally very easy to start over, and you're usually itching to start over by the time you die, because if you do die, it is typically very apparent to you what you did wrong. It's in these bite-sized chunks where that's just the ebb and flow of the game, where it's constantly testing your defenses and testing your strategy. And then when your strategy falls apart, you're eager for a chance to try it again, because you understand where it went wrong. So between that and the completely randomized nature of it, you know, it just feels like another story. It feels like a separate, you know, a separate adventure where completing the game or getting the best ship isn't really the point. It's about how do you do it all the most efficiently.
The progression is so different each time you play that it's not like Spelunky, where you know that you didn't make it to World 2. You know, like Spelunky, while it is different each time you play, like it's like, okay, I am in the caves, then I'm in the forest, then I'm in the ice world, then I'm in the tombs, then I beat the game. Like, here, you don't feel like you've been shamed or that you haven't reached a, you know, a desired goal when you die. It's not, you feel like you did your best.
It's thrilling. I mean, it really is, like, especially when you're up against a wall and you're in, it's so many of those moments from like TV or movie space battles when it's like push all the energy into this one thing or pull all the crew off of this and put them all in the engine room working to repair the damage so I can get that one more shot off that I need. There's a lot of those, like, those great moments, and it takes a lot of really complex elements and makes them that would normally put me way, way off. And by grounding them in the ship physically, it makes it all very easy to take in just at a glance. I mean, you intuitively understand how this ship works just looking at it.
Yeah. The only reason I would recommend the normal mode to even give it a try after you've played the easy mode maybe for a while and gotten the hang of it is it makes you kind of a despicable person. You start, like, working with pirates who are taking advantage of people and are like, hey, just take $5, look the other way, just keep moving in the galaxy, nothing to see here. You know, we both didn't come out of this doing pretty well. Because if you try to be a hero in this game, you are punished. Like,
in normal mode, yeah.
Yeah.
In easy mode, you're like the white knight of the solar system just gallivanting around like, oh, no problem, I'll take care of this guy. And on normal mode, it's like, well, listen, I'm not going to tell you your business. You are obviously a pirate.
Yeah.
So just go ahead and murder everybody on board and steal all their gold. And if you can just give me, like, a missile. If you can give me, like, one missile, then I'll just be on my way. I got another nebula to explore. And you've obviously got some cultural things going on here that I don't really understand.
The worst was somebody was like, we have somebody on board who appears to just have a cold. Do you think you could stop for a second? We'd give you all this money. I was like, hell no, that cold's a zombie plague. Like, you guys are on your own. I'm booting.
And you don't know, like, even if you saw that exact same beginning of a quest, you don't know if it's the good guy, you know, you're going to get the good zombie guy or the bad zombie guy. It's like, and the good guy will, like, join your crew and
be really helpful.
And it's like, the bad guy will, like, infect everybody on your crew. I think one time I had an upgraded medical bay and I actually healed him from space. Like, listen, you guys just chill for a sec. I'm going to hit you with some beams and see if that don't sort it out. Because if not, I got to be on down that lonesome road. Because you guys, I can't bring you on.
Let's pick the winner.
Okay.
Chris Grant?
I have one other question for you, Justin, on FTL.
Hit me.
Tell me about the graphics, because that's important to me.
It is, I would say they're simple, not...
How high-res are they?
The term retro aesthetic has become so, like...
It's not really retro. It's not
I wouldn't say it's retro. I'm trying to think of a comparable... I mean, it's not realistic, certainly. But I don't know, Chris. What cues would you...
I would say it's just very simple hand-drawn representations of what this... You know, like, when you drew ships in your elementary school, like, notebook? Did you ever do that where you'd be like, nope. this is a ship.
Oh, sure.
And these are my rooms, and this room has this power. It looks a lot like that if done very well.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like notebook designs for your future Facebook... Or not Facebook. Your Starship layouts.
Other thing I would say about this game is it really needs to be on iPad.
Oh my
god! Yeah, I don't know how well it would control. I'm kind of mixed.
It's
on
all
that.
Clicking. I mean, it's all.
Yeah, but I use a lot of hotkeys.
No movement. I do use a lot of hotkeys too. That would slow things down. But I would really encourage anybody to give it a try. And because not only is it really great, there are so many other directions I could see them going with it. Like, I'd love to see them get more into, like, personalizing the crew and maybe more permanence, like Griffin talked about. The other thing is when you have crew members manning a certain station for extended periods of time, then they become really good at it, and you get bonuses for them manning that station. So, you know, like, when my weapons expert gun dude was on the guns for long enough, then eventually my guns would be really solid. And the alien species that you pick up also have their own attributes built in
yeah.
that they're already good at. Like, there's one that's a sort of a not a bug-like alien, but like
a mantis.
No, not the mantis. The electric.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Dudes. There's these green Martian-type fellows that if you put them into one of your rooms, they emit a electrical pulse from their body that actually charges the weapons and saves you some energy. So like each of the different crew members has their own
I had one that had second sight and I could see where people were walking around on other ships, which was great, because then I was like, oh, they're all running to go fix this, I'm gonna blast the hell out of that and just kill everyone on board.
Yes, the slugs yeah. are psychic. The slug people are psychic.
All right, guys, I think I've did some calculations. I've got a spreadsheet okay. here. I've been adding in all the features everyone's talked about and all the superlatives. I rank each superlative Scrabble style. So I've been weighting those as well. I ran it through. I pulled the lever a couple minutes ago, and it's just wrapping up the calculations now. But it's looking...
Chris Grantatron?
It's looking pretty clear, guys. I think FTL is going to take it.
Yes!
Yay!
You can't... The amount of enthusiasm, I absorbed your enthusiasm, and I injected that into the spreadsheet, and that really, I think, tipped the meter. Right. And I think with Borderlands 2, it's a great game. It's got a lot of cool stuff in it, but, you know, more doesn't necessarily make it better. I think FTL brings a lot of originality, brings a lot of kind of unique, clever design. Even though it's got graphics like a high school notebook.
Yeah. We've gotten some flack for skipping over games before. I do not think we have seen anything like we will see the lashing we'll receive for not making Borderlands 2 the game. And I think if you're one of those, if you're writing that angry email right now, I would say don't even worry about it, because A, none of this matters.
It's all video games.
It's all video games. None of this matters. B, this podcast is nobody gives a shit. And C, like, Little Big Planet's out next week. That's obviously going to take it over. Pokemon's out a couple weeks after that. That one's going to just knock it right off the block. Like, it's so fluid. It's like
I'm also going to say this, guys. If you're going to, before you get grumpy about one game winning or another, go give FTL a download.
Yeah,
go snag it.
Give it a play.
It's Windows and Mac. It's like $8, $9, I think, on Steam, and it'll run on your old, you know, MacBook Air or your.
It's one of the few games that I have on my Mac and will keep here because it is really good. And I would encourage you, Chris Griffin, will you guys please play
it today? Why don't you go s**t an indie dev's is what I bet people are writing. Oh, I bet okay, you. Well, why don't you get Jonathan Blow's?
Okay, can
these
I ask
guys?
You,
they're so hipster.
Does it beat Mark of the Ninja?
Yeah. I mean, that I don't say that lightly. Mark of the Ninja is a great game.
I played all through Mark of the Ninja, and I think FTL is both better and more important.
Well, I think FTL will, I have no shame in saying this, will definitely be near, I would not be surprised if it is in my top list at the end of the year, or if it is something we're seriously debating at the end of Besties this year.
All right, guys, I need just a little bit more data to make the final determination between Mark and the Ninja and FTL. Is there maybe a couple more superlatives you could throw in there?
Why don't you kiss Genova Chen on the mouth?
Is that enough? Does that do
I
it?
Think that did it. FTL, the new
yes.
number Subtle. One best game of all time, officially, as stated by Polygon.com currently, and all of its editors. We all agree equally.
Footle.
FTL.
Footle.
Griffin.
Yes.
Will you play FTL today?
I will. Do you guys hear that trash truck? Do you think it's like FTL in there? Do you think they're like, oh, someone needs to be on the trash engine? I get so excited. Oh, here in Austin, we have those trash trucks that have the mechanical arms on the sides of them, and it scoops up the can and it dumps it right in the back. It's the game of the year. I can't system. Play it. I'm very busy. I'm working on two reviews simultaneously right now. I will get around to it, though.
All right, Chris?
I have an iPhone 5.
What about our route? You can't play it yet because you lost your iPhone 4.
That's true. Guys, listen to this story. Ready? I left my iPhone 4 at the train station yesterday. I realized I left it there. It was dead. That's why I didn't check it for a while, and I didn't realize it was gone. But I can't remote wipe it using Find My iPhone because it's dead. So I got to wait for somebody to turn it on. So I've got it set to like wipe when it turns on and send me an email. But nobody's turned it on yet, which means I don't think anyone's found it. And so I'm just like, It's in D.C. I almost want to hop in the train and go back down there. But it was because my stupid battery only lasts like an hour. But I got the new phone today. It was kind of good timing, but I can't activate the new phone because doing that will disable the SIM on the old phone, and then it won't check in and get the signal to remote wipe. So I need to wait until somebody finds it and plugs it in before I can activate it.
I have to wait until somebody tries to steal it.
Yeah. I can wait until somebody really like officially tries to steal it, yeah.
Have you considered taking Phil Fish on a romantic carriage ride through the country?
I haven't. I'm not sure how that would help my phone situation.
I'm just saying, if you love Super Meat Boy so much, why don't you marry it?
Okay. All right. That's gonna do it for us here. All the besties.
Halo. Ba 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 ba.
Thank you for listening. You can read all the crap we write on theverge.com/gaming.
It's not crap.
That will soon be polygon.com. Chris, when's Polygon gonna launch?
It's definitely gonna be 20. Okay, it's almost definitely gonna be in the 2010s.
Okay, definitely in the 2010s. Can you give the people anything more concrete than that? People turn to our show for the breaking news.
I think if you've been watching the Press Reset series, you'd tell now that it's somewhere between now and Thanksgiving.
Fair enough. Okay. And that's going to do it for us, the besties. Please subscribe and review our podcast on iTunes. And make sure to join us again next Friday for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games? Bestie!